Zachary Sequoia has worked within the digital technology industry since the mid-90s, starting in San Francisco. For the last 20 years, he's worked for some of the world's most well-known digital brands on three different continents. Having called Australia home for more than a decade and a half, Zachary has been part of a Melbourne and Sydney creative and startup scene, working as a creative director and innovation director for a number of ventures. He's founded two successful digital agencies in Melbourne and Canberra, and he's founded two successful startup companies in Melbourne and here in Bega. Zach is also part of the drive and vision behind the recently announced Bega Valley Innovation Hub at the University of Wollongong. Pointing us towards the future, please welcome Zachary Sequoia.
Thanks, Ian. I'm also moving house this weekend, so I apologize if I need a few notes. Yes, I know, I might grab some of these boxes later. Thank you. I am so pleased to follow the robot team. I saw them first 3 years ago at a week-long innovation festival that Liam O'Diver put on as part of what has been a 10-year organic grassroots movement within this valley. Whether or not you have been involved or knew about it, it was going on, and that was a huge reason why we were awarded the first federal incubator support grant to any regional community. With the local buy-in and some state help, we're looking at close to $750,000 that's going to be spent here in the next 2 years. And I'm going to tell you a little bit more about that. But I'm really pleased to be following them. This is, I agree with the teacher so much, this is really what we need. There, I don't think that I'm pushing it to say there's a certain age group within this room that's overrepresented. And I'm really applaud you for staying. But if we only show up to hear the politics that we already agree with of people in our own age group and then leave right before the young people are trying to tell you about their world, that is not changing and it's not engaging. It's just an echo chamber. What is innovation? It's thrown around so much, unfortunately, it's not said at all in the brand new Prime Minister, but go back 3 years and it dominated his speech when he first became Prime Minister. Since then, a lot of people ask me, what is innovation? It is used as a political tool sometimes, but there is a clear definition and I'll get into it later. It's a industry that I feel privileged to have worked in for 20 years. So who am I? I consult with government, local, federal, and a lot of state. I work very strongly in the commercialization of research, especially tax-funded research with CSIRO and a lot of the research institutions in Australia. I have worked for many global brands, helping them bring new products. And you know, that's really what innovation is all about, is doing something new, thinking in a new way about something. We all know robots are coming for our jobs. I was gonna go really dark on you guys. And then try to cheer you up and say it's not that bad, but I really instead cut a lot of these slides out to hopefully at the end have some time to show you a few regional entrepreneurs that I personally work with of why I am quite optimistic about the future. Look, for centuries people have been worried about technology, machines coming for their jobs. This is almost a cliche in my world as somebody drums up something about a quote about the first television or something and people were totally freaked out about it. I tried to find a couple that you might not have heard from. Socrates in 470 BC was so against writing. Before that, pages were mostly transactional receipts that you could go back to later around trade. Nobody was writing their thoughts down. And as the age of philosophy was coming forward, people were writing their thoughts down. He thought it was a horrible thing. He thought it destroyed your soul because it stole your memories. The memories stayed on the page and not in your head. Trains. When the Stockton-Darlington Railway opened in 1825, as you know, Britain had a lot of scientists and community scientists. The National Geographic Society was there. And they showed up to say, this is terrible. Anybody who gets on a train and goes more than 30 miles an hour, their organs will surely liquefy. Telephones. The instrument of the devil is what a leader in Sweden called it. He thought many people thought devils would travel over the lines, and far more importantly, they thought it would make the women idle. The fact is, technology creates more jobs than it destroys. That's a fact. Humans who experience this for the most part are better off. Across all advanced economies, the length of average work week has fallen by nearly 50%. We have more days off for personal days. We have more days off for sick leave. We have more time for leisure. What we do with that time is what I'm interested in. Let's be clear. Jobs will go. They always do. It's estimated that 57% of jobs in the near future are going to be automated. In 1800, 83% of Americans worked in agriculture. By 1970, it was down to 5%, and yet employment grew exponentially during that time, and farms feed more people than ever. Closer to home, the whaling industry was a $7.6 billion export commodity industry. That's in today's dollars. Thousands of men were employed, hundreds of ships, many in Eden. When that stopped to be productive, when the people came together and said, we're not going to do whaling anymore, those people changed their skills. They didn't roll over and die. Nobody said, we need to protect these jobs so much more than we need to protect the whales. We will survive. We're not facing a jobs shortage. We're facing a skills shortage. And there are a lot of baby boomers in the room, but they, as the baby boomers retire, the millennials are now the largest group of working people in Australia. And only 50% of retired baby boomer jobs are getting replaced. That means 50% of all new jobs are brand new jobs, ones you haven't thought of yet. Some haven't been invented yet. We need to be prepared for this. Whether you like it or not, I'm here to say, let's start this conversation. And I think it comes very closely with Hugh's talk about community engagement. In this hub, we'll need people of all ages. People forget in diversity is age. It's not just ethnicity. It's not just gender. We need people of all ages to be involved in this. And it's one of the ways that you can become doing more with your community. Don't need to just join a church or go to a book group. The future of work is people. It really, really is. I want to be really clear, and I hope this shakes a few people. We have no responsibility to protect jobs. None at all. Jobs change. They need to be fit for purpose. What we have is an absolute responsibility to protect people. We need to become engaged in helping the transition of skills, and we need to make sure that the young people of today and anyone who wants to change has the skills that they need for a crazy, fast-changing future. The impact of artificial intelligence and machine learning is projected to increase labor productivity and give us 40% more of our time. What do we do with that time? Get ready for the great reskilling. The average half-life of learned business competency has dropped from 30 years in 1984 to 5 years in 2018. You can study through traditional education and have be a subject matter expert that used to mean a career. Now it means 5 years. 65% of children entering primary school, I have two, are going to be in jobs that have not been invented yet. 70% of business leaders have said they know they're going to need new skills and training in the future. Humans are going to be okay. We're going to do what we do best. Creative thinking, critical thinking, value judgments, teaching and communicating, and soft social skills. We talked about fake news and how millennials are getting so much fake news. If we had more critical thinking, creative thinking, and value judgments instilled in them, they will be able to pick apart fake news like we all feel we might be able to. Education needs to be fit for purpose. Siloed, disconnected subjects are failing the people looking for work in the future. Future jobs, schools will be project-focused and problem-solving focused. They'll focus on emerging technologies, and luckily for my kids, the way technology is entering education, even as we speak, maybe slowly here, but I work all in the East Coast, in Brisbane, in Sydney, in Melbourne, in Canberra, it's going to allow regional communities to get some of this excellent future-focused education, and we won't be in any disservice, hindered in any way being in a remote community. There's big changes ahead. The workforce is going to be far more diverse than it ever was. And more importantly, whether you like it or not, it's going to be focused heavily on freelance, contract, and crowdsource work. 2020, 46% of the workforce in the Western world is predicted to be working in the gig economy. If you don't know what the gig economy is, that's basically what I just said. Contractors, freelancers, crowdsourced work. These are not people necessarily being pushed out of their jobs. Maybe that exists and we need to have that conversation. But the majority of the young people want that way of working. They have control over when they work. They put more emphasis on the quality of the work they do over the amount of stability they have and full-time work. Just because we worked in a different way or you worked in a different way, we can't always look through that lens and project that on to how the young people are going to work. I'm being told I have only 5 minutes left. Let's bring it right down to home. I love it here. I've been here for 10 years. My kids were born here, my eldest in the new old hospital. I'm a signatory on the incubator support grant. Many people put in hundreds of volunteer hours to make this happen. I'm very excited for it, and I hope you guys get involved. What is innovation? It's a new method, a new idea, a new product. Look at some of the synonyms. I love innovation. It's challenging ways of doing things, making sure they're fit for purpose. We need to have the conversation together to make sure we're not disrupting for disruption's sake. I'm not saying that at all. But we need to make sure that in a changing world, things stay fit for purpose. And we need a whole range of people to help come up with the new ideas that are going to shape our future. Innovation's hard. Who thinks they know what the hardest part of innovation is? The biggest hurdle to innovation is status quo. As a culture, as a species, we are hurtling through space with behavioral inertia that we do the same things over and over again. It's very hard to get someone to enthusiastically adopt a new way of thinking. This is a famously overused quote in my world. Henry Ford said, "If I had asked people what they wanted, they would have said a faster horse." People don't know what they don't know. In an innovation hub, and I work in many, I work in accelerators and incubators all over Australia. It's pretty much what I do. I run workshops probably 3 days a week with entrepreneurs from high school age kids right through to retired folks getting into the industry in a social enterprise aspect. The way we're working now is looking at the user first. What's been done forever, especially in government and large organizations like universities and research institutions, was a solutions first approach. Somebody at a high level thinks of something that is gonna be good for everyone, they spend a ton of money doing it with very little consultation, and they tell everyone right down to the bottom, every slice of the cake, this is what you're doing, and often it's not fit for purpose. And what we call lean innovation methodology, which I teach almost every day, we start at the end user. We make sure that there is a problem that we're meeting. We test whether that problem exists. We test whether our solution is fit for purpose for that problem. And we test whether the delivery of that solution is the way people want it. And those three things we call value proposition. That's a very simple way of saying what we will do at the hub. It'll be many weeks of that. And there's a lot of tools we use to do that. But it's a great way, especially in government, which is why you saw a lot of government that I work with. It's making maximum impact and mitigating risk of using our tax dollars in a way that is not going to create impact. Who are the innovators? I have very little time. I'm only going to get through a couple of these. Most people think of this guy, Elon Musk. I want to walk you through just a couple that I work with from regional areas, and there are a couple from Canberra, which in Australia is, trust me, a regional area when it comes to pipeline, okay, of talent. Jessica May, enabled employment. She created an online platform like Seek for people with disabilities and diversity. 1 in 5 Australians has some sort of disability, but this also includes elderly people, returned servicemen and women, the gay and lesbian and LGBTQ community. She's had already nearly 10,000 placements. This is David Knightley with the Assistant Minister for Innovation, his company EcoSpectral. I work with all these people. They put sensors in buildings, large government buildings and libraries, universities that deal with lots of people. And the sensors figure out how people are engaging with the building. And they take over the power systems and heating systems and lighting systems to make it the most efficient. They learn through machine learning how people are using the building. It saves thousands of dollars in power and, of course, all those associated emissions. On the right, we have Robin Heen from the Department of Primary Industry. She works in Armidale. She's developing an app with some guys at University of New South Wales. You put onto a quad bike that will predict through some very cool, complex trigonometry I could never understand. speed and slope and bump height to predict whether farmers and people who work on the land will come off in an injury or fatality, which is a huge work and safety problem in farming, both here and in New Zealand. These guys started out in a demountable building trailer in a far-off car park in ANU as a couple of guys off the street, some entrepreneurs. They basically, I don't even understand exactly what they do, but they manage open source software for companies. 3 years later, nearly 4 years later, they just raised $20 million. They're now employ 70 people, and by next year they're going to employ 150 people. We don't even know how, we have to know what these, how these things work. We just have to help them make sure it's going to have impact, and that's my job. Harold Dimple created a system that allows the diaspora of immigrants in Australia to send micropayments, so under $100, purely through mobile phone, no bank, no on-ramp, no off-ramp. Their parents in developing countries all over Africa, Asia, can use that money on their mobile phone, no off-ramp, there's no bank. These people have no bank. They live in villages. They can use that mobile phone to pay for groceries, to pay for power, to pay for their school fees. Outside of a bank, it exists parallel. It doesn't hardly exist in Australia. It's very common in Africa. It's called mobile money, and he is a pioneer in that space, empowering mostly women to take over their finance without bank accounts. In the center, we have Ashley Miles. She is creating a platform for kids who grew up on farms to keep track of the skills they learn, a certain type of combine harvester, certain use of farm-grade chainsaws. The platform will help these, she does it in building blocks that keeps track of these skills and is signed off by the person they're working for so that by the time they are ready to join the workforce, they have accounting of all of the skills they have. It builds a virtual CV. I'm almost done. This guy created Mathletics. If anyone's had children in the Western world, they've probably dealt with something, a program called Mathletics. He's now, he sold that to a U.S. company and now employs 17 people in a new project called Schoolbo, where he does the same thing instead of math, is using it for early literacy and reading. Sophia. She has a company called Mineral Carbon International. They sequester carbon into concrete blocks and use it for building. This guy, Jacob Keed, he's created an app that helps people to find out information using geofencing, knowing the GPS of the of traditional Aboriginal culture wherever they are, how to have a welcome to country, what the language is, and significant events or histories in that place. Who's going to be the next person in my slide? It could be anyone in this room. I very much encourage you to get involved with the with the Innovation Hub. It's early days. We've only just hired a manager. Look for community events in the next couple of months. The first applications for people with ideas, whether they're absolutely early stage or businesses already existing, will happen probably late November and December. The first cohort will go through in January, and during the next 2 years, we'll also be working heavily within the high schools to prepare people for this type of thinking. Thank you very much.
I'm so glad there are people from outside the Bega Valley here because they get to meet people like Zachary Sequoia. Thank you so much, Zach. Before we break for afternoon tea, does anyone have a question for Zach?
It's really exciting, your presentation. I just wondered, a lot of it is the individual with the great idea, which makes sense. But listening to, say, those boys from Naruma High, it's a bit like they didn't know much about what they were doing, never made a robot. They had the excitement, I guess, the interest and inspiration. It was the coming together and the learning together. And I just wondered if you saw potential for sort of collaborative ideas. So people that come together and want to work on something, like, just to pick a random example, how might one deal with climate change in a small rural community? But the idea that there'd be people too that don't have a specific idea but are looking to work with a group that might come up with a really large challenge.
Collaboration is absolutely key. We have entrepreneurs and residents who come in from all ages and all walks of life to bring their expertise into the rooms. We're not going to turn away a single founder, but we almost always encourage teams. If someone comes into us as a single idea, we say go out and find a few other folks. We need diversity in skill sets. And we do things called hackathons, collab labs. They're done all over now. They all have different names. Ideas jams, they call it in Sydney. I would love to see the Bega Valley Shire Council or industry as a whole, tourism, aged care, agriculture, come to us and say, let's coordinate an ideas jam. We get people from all ages, we get students, we get experts, doctors, engineers, we put them on teams. They usually have 48 hours to tackle a challenge. It could be, how can we best solve climate change in the Bega Valley? It could be, how can we deal with cruise ships coming into Eden in a way that supports both the community but also takes into account lifestyle? These guys compete, usually, because a little bit of competition is good. They pitch their presentations at the end of 48 hours, and usually it's sponsored in some way so that, you know, they get to feel like either their idea will be published or maybe some grant money going towards it, or maybe it's a sponsored position going through the hub program for the next cohort. We do this all the time up in Canberra and in Sydney, and it's very much collaborative.
Thanks, Zach. Good luck packing.
Thank you.